This is One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health.
All right, welcome into a Thursday edition of One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. And right out of the chute, Steve, there is new Bills news to discuss as the Bills have once again added to their offensive line. Earlier in free agency, they had their most significant free agent signing in terms of dollars and cents, signing Cowboys free agent guard Connor McGovern to a three-year deal. Today, they have signed former Rams offensive lineman David Edwards to a one-year deal, a guard by trade, at least in terms of his NFL career, four-year starter for the Rams, including a start in the Super Bowl in 2019. Only played in four games last year due to a concussion that landed him on injured reserve. He was originally designated to return, but never did last season. Injuries abounded up and down the offensive line for the Rams last year, which largely compromised the effectiveness of their offense. But this is a young veteran, Steve, that has a multitude of playing experience and, played his college ball at Wisconsin, where he was a first-team All-American there. So pretty good competition to bring in. And I don't know about you, Steve, but I'm sensing a shift in what the Bills are adding to their offensive line and free agency. The last few years, last couple of years, I should say, they've been older free agent players added. You know, like David Quessenberry on the other side of 30. Same thing for Bobby Hart.
Right.
And other guys that have been added to the fold. Greg Van Roten last year, over 30 years of age. David Edwards, younger veteran. Same thing with Connor McGovern, younger veteran player. So I'm sensing a little bit of a shift here in terms of all of the qualities they're looking for in offensive linemen to add to the fold here.
He started virtually every game of his career except the ones he missed last year with injury. I mean, he's up till then, he played every down. As a fifth-round draft pick, he came out and was plugged into their interior offensive line, played every year until last year when he had 45 starts out of 53 possible games. That's a pretty good stretch. And obviously has the world championship with Von Miller. Let's not forget that, a former teammate of Von's. So brings something to the table. Big dude, 6'5", three Bills plus, so he's – he kind of fits those parameters that the Bills look for. He's 6'6", 308 listed. I see a trend with the Bills signing interior offensive linemen. I love it. I think it's great. It's right where they need to be. And as much talk as we've talked about, weapons and adding weapons out there, man, getting that offensive line settled in with some competition and some guys who with some youth and some motivation really speaks well, I think.
Yeah, and you're going to want to stay tuned because we're expecting to get Buffalo's newest signee on the air here in about 10, 15 minutes' time. We'll be speaking with David Edwards. He is not here in Buffalo, as I understand it, but we'll get him on the line and talk to him here in short order. So if you want to hear from the newest Bills offensive lineman, we will have him here on One Bills Live in about 10, 15 minutes' time. So we look forward to that discussion with him. I think the other important thing to note here is Edwards should be able to hit the ground running here in Buffalo because Buffalo's offensive line coach, Aaron Cromer, was his offensive line coach for the first two seasons of his NFL career in L.A. So this is a guy that knows the blocking techniques that Aaron Cromer wants his linemen to employ. So that should be just like riding a bike for him when he comes in for OTAs in a couple of months.
That's interesting to me because Cromer's been, he came in last year and a lot of people were unhappy with the way the Bills offensive line performed and they were kind of thrown together. I don't know how many guys had experience with Cromer last year before.
Roger Saffold. Dude.
Saffold was the one. And now they continue to bring guys in who Cromer is familiar with or who are familiar with him. It says something, I think, particularly a guy who was in the first couple of years of his career, where he was a fifth-round draft pick, you'd have to say overachieved, being the starting right guard or left guard for a Super Bowl-winning team.
I mean, he's played in two Super Bowls, I believe, because he was a rookie in 19 when they, right? Isn't that, or was that the 18 Super Bowl that the Rams played in with McVay against the Patriots?
No, you just said that it was, it was January of 19, so it might have been, or February of 19, so it might have been after the 18 season.
Yeah, so it might have just been the Super Bowl against the Bengals that they won 2 years ago.
It was only that one. Yeah, that we're being told that now. So, yeah, he's had some success under Cromer. Cromer knows him. Some of that will bring come over, no question about it. Certainly, Cromer is not sitting over there saying, don't bring the guy in.
Well, I would, right? I would surmise that Cromer was vouching for him.
Right.
When the personnel department came to talk to him about, hey, look, what do you think of this guy? You know, can he?
We're liking this guy.
Does he fit what we do?
Right. You know, they come to him. They say,
I mean, that's firsthand knowledge from a guy that worked with him every day for 2 years.
Right. The scouting department comes over and says, hey, we're seeing this guy on film. You've coached him. What do you think of him? And he corroborates or dispels whatever their thoughts are. He'll give him a clean evaluation what he saw of him as a player and as a human being because. As you all know, these guys spend hours in meetings, and they get to know each other really well. So Cromer's going to be really familiar with Edwards when he comes in, and they'll have a relationship. It does help.
Now, we did have reports earlier in the week, NFL Network's Mike Garafolo, the first to report, that the Bills reportedly had agreed to terms with David Quessenberry, but we haven't seen anything official from the Bills yet on that front. So without him as part of the equation here, by my count, the Bills are up to 11 offensive linemen on the roster, counting all the future free agents that were signed in January that spent most of the year on Buffalo's practice squad. Those three players, Alec Anderson, the undrafted rookie who they signed, Greg Manns, who was originally signed as a free agent last year but did not make the 53-man roster and reverted to the team's practice squad, and then Ryan Vandermark, who was another offensive lineman that got picked up midway through the season. So that's how that shakes out. And then we also have the players that are on the roster right now. Ryan Bates, Ike Butker. You've got Spencer Brown, Deion Dawkins, Tommy Doyle, David Edwards, who just signed today, Connor McGovern, and Mitch Morse. That gives you 11 offensive linemen on the roster if the team eventually confirms what NFL Network is reporting about David Quessenberry agreeing to terms and re-signing on a one-year deal. Now you'll be up to 12, and you're really starting to fill that thing out, you know, as far as who you're bringing to camp.
Did you say Greg Manns?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I mean, they've got some guys now. They're getting up above 10 guys on the roster, and they're starting to bring in some competition now. That's and as you kind of figured – We've been in this place before with Bills, and we mentioned this too. This is it's not for nothing. The Bills started this when Brandon Bean got here. One of the things they did that we'd never seen anybody do a lot of was sign these guys to these one-year deals. Now everybody's doing that. A free agent market is out there every single year where these guys have signed a one-year deal with a team and want to prove it and maybe hit a home run on the next deal. Every team's doing it now, and I think the Bills were the trendsetters in that, to my mind. And they continue to do it. And I think for players, I don't think players are afraid of that. They're kind of saying, yeah, okay, I'll do it. I'm going to make myself more valuable. And indeed they do. And I like the strategy. I like what it says about the players. And I also like what it says about the organization. At the end of it all, they get all the money back on the cap that they paid these guys out in 1 year. They're in and out. And the cap stays flexible and loose where you've got a cushion. At the end of the season, the only thing is, like what we're about to see when training camp opens. When you open the training camp, you may only have two guys from your starting five offensive linemen line up and take the first rep together. Maybe three for the Bills. Spencer Brown will probably line up at right tackle. But your wide receiver core may not. Your running back room certainly is not going to be that way. Yeah, your defensive line group may not be that way. So I think most teams are getting to the point where they're putting it on their coaching staffs to get these guys in the door, get them acclimated, get their cohesion, get them settled in, and get them off and running to a fast start, even though at the beginning of OTAs and mini camps and before training camp starts, they don't even know each other.
Mm-hmm.
That's a new atmosphere in the NFL that I think is rampant. That's part of the point in history we're at. And I think it says something about the quality of coaching these teams can put out there, but it also says something about the players and how they understand how that works as well. It's a new atmosphere, and I think a new, I don't know, aspect of pro football that is not seen at any other level. Well, maybe it is now with NILs. You know what I'm saying? Where you got kids transferring all the time. But it's something that has never been – it's new in football. And the NFL is the forefront of it.
The other news concerning Buffalo's roster and free agency deals with wide receiver Jamison Crowder, who, according to reports, is going to sign with the Giants on a one-year contract. Crowder obviously signed here on a one-year deal last year, only played in four games after a broken ankle cost him the rest of the season. Presumably healthy enough to pass a physical now, it looks like Crowder is going to sign a one-year contract with the Giants and play in a very similar offensive scheme, obviously, under Brian Daboll in New York.
Yeah, almost
and the
identical.
Bills will, presuming he makes the roster, the Bills will see him later this season because the Bills play the Giants.
It's a tough break for Crowder, too. I've said it before, early on in the first third of the season, he was just starting to get his legs under him and catch some passes. And, yeah, man, I like the way he plays. I really do. I love the way he plays, and I'm sure Daboll sees the same thing or about the same thing as I do. I mean, just a twitchy guy inside, strong on the football, good after the catch. It just, you know, bad luck, no pun intended, a bad break here with the Bills when he got his leg broken. Cost him the season. That was a tough loss for the Bills, I think. And that's what really led to John Brown and Cole Beasley being back in the building, to me.
Yeah, because his subtraction hurt. As you said, he was just starting to pick up steam within the offense, and then he gets injured in week four against the Ravens.
I don't think John Brown or Cole Beasley are here. Maybe John Brown is. Cole Beasley's not here if Jamison Crowder didn't get hurt last year.
And he's been a guy that has proven himself, and he did it, you know, on a Washington team that didn't have a true franchise quarterback, and he did it on a Jets team that didn't have a true franchise quarterback. So coming here, the thought was with a proven franchise quarterback in Josh Allen, he could really take off, but unfortunately injury compromised that and it never materialized here. So good luck to Jamison in New York with the Giants. Just not the week that they play the Bills, of course. So Jamison Crowder goes elsewhere, according to reports. And, you know, now you look at Buffalo's situation. The offensive line and its depth is starting to round into form. As I said, 11 players on the roster who play the offensive line. If the Quessenberry deal becomes official, that makes 12. And you arguably have your swing tackle back again from last year in Quessenberry. You have a starting guard, presumably, in Connor McGovern, based on the investment made there, 3 years, $23 million. And then you have David Edwards, who could conceivably, as a four-year starter, compete with Ryan Bates for the starting right guard job, as I see it. Tell me if you think differently.
That's how I see it. Now, you've got Mance and Morse at center. Those are the two guys that are fighting it out to be the center. And you go,
well, Morse is the center.
Morse is the center. He's not going anywhere. Then you got Butker, Edwards, McGovern, and Bates. And then the tackles, you got like five of those guys. You got Alec Anderson, Spencer Brown, Deion Dawkins, and Tommy Doyle. There's four tackles there. And Kessenberry has been mentioned, but he's not official, so that may not happen. In fact, the fact that they signed
Edwards,
a
guard,
he's
first.
A guard, but you know, who knows. Nevertheless, they're filling it out, and they've got some interior competition to come in. Maybe they're thinking tackle in the draft as well, you know. So there's always that. And I know we were talking, and it's that time of season. The Bills have been mocked offensive tackle after offensive tackle after offensive tackle in the last 10 days.
Mm. Yeah, and Charles Davis from NFL Network, good friend of the show here, just put his latest mock draft up, and he has Tennessee offensive tackle Darnell Wright to the Bills with the pick at 27. I'll tell you right now, I wouldn't be unhappy with that. I like Darnell Wright. He played right tackle for the Volunteers and was pretty effective. And, you know, he also, some people believe He projects inside to guard. So if he cannot beat out, you know, let's say he gets drafted by the Bills, he's probably going to compete at tackle, but may not win the job there. Once again, we're getting into this conversation about third-year players and how they need to step up and show out. We saw Dawson Knox do it. We've seen Taron Johnson do it, really have breakout seasons in their third year. Spencer Brown is entering his third year. And Brandon Bean, who spoke just as free agency was opening a couple of weeks ago, or actually last week, he said he really liked and the team really liked the way Spencer Brown finished the season. Obviously, he got off to a slow start coming off back surgery in the offseason. But if he can use the end of last season, which Brandon Bean and the personnel department and the coaching staff were very happy with, as a springboard into this season, and competition is only pushing him all the more, maybe he has a really, really nice third NFL season, which we've seen a lot of Bills players who are former draft picks of this team blossom, you know, in the third year.
Yeah, and it's it comes down to who's going to be available, who, you know, and he's a 6'5", 333-pounder. I mean, when you get these guys that are well into the 300 bill for their weight, you love those guys down inside because they're just so hard to push back into the lap of your quarterback. They can anchor. This is, which is why this guy, you know, Osiris Torrance from Florida has been mocked to the Bills. He's this big, huge, flat-footed guy who can anchor, and you can't push him. And you get these big defensive tackles like the Bills loved last year when they had Jordan Phillips and DaQuan Jones on the field. You know, those guys, you need guys to stand up to them. I've been saying it on and on and on. The big, huge guys are rare. The guys who can play are rare. There's a lot of big, huge guys. Not all of them can play.
Let's go to a big, huge guy who can play.
Yeah.
Who's on the line now. The newest Buffalo Bill, one David Edwards, who signed on the dotted line today. One-year deal with Buffalo. David, congratulations. Welcome to Buffalo. Tell me, how much of a sell job did Aaron Kromer put on you to get you to sign here, your old O-line coach back in L.A. your first 2 years?
Yeah, well, thank you guys for having me, and I'm really excited to be a Bill. So I got the opportunity to play for him for, you know, 2 years, my first 2 years in L.A., and I got the chance to visit the facility and sit down with him, and it didn't take long, but, you know, he's a great coach. I owe him a ton for who I am as a player today and have the utmost respect for him as a person, as a coach.
Give us your idea of what you expected when you started talking to Buffalo before your visit, and then what happened, what changed, what did you see after your visit, how did it make you feel? You know, give us your take on the vibe here.
Yeah, I from afar, you just see a really talented roster, some great schemes, both offensively and defensively. And then, you know, when you go and visit, you kind of confirm what you thought from afar, right? In addition to those great players, those great coaches, those great personnel staff, you know, just some incredible people in that building. Everyone was incredibly friendly and welcoming. And I just thought it was a great fit for not only myself, but for my wife and my two girls. And it's close to home. It's just the perfect opportunity, I thought.
And then, David, I don't know how much changed after Coach Kromer left L.A. in terms of what you were asked to do as an offensive lineman, but I imagine it's going to be kind of like riding a bike for you. I mean, with all the starts you have under your belt in this league, getting back to the way Kromer likes things done in terms of blocking techniques, combos, all that kind of stuff, I imagine it's just going to be like getting right back on a bike and riding it. You're going to be able to hit the ground running when you get in here in OTAs, right?
Yeah, no question. And there was, you know, not a ton of difference in what I did when Chrome left. Like I said earlier, I think so highly of him as a coach. The techniques and the fundamentals that he teaches are what I think should be taught in this league and, you know, sustained for a long time in this league. So, again, I owe him a ton for, you know, who I am as a player today.
So give us your timeline. I know that I don't know where you're at now. I mean, you're on the West Coast now. Are you in L.A. or are you back home?
I'm back home. So
are you around Chicago?
I'm in Chicago right now. I'm actually at my parents' place. But my wife and I have a house in Chesterton, Indiana, where we live.
So what's your timeline about when you're going to, you know, like show up in Buffalo? What are the what has the team told you about maybe coming in, getting acclimated to the building, maybe before OTAs and minicamp?
Yeah, so we're working through that right now. I would love to, you know, get a place to live, obviously, and kind of get acclimated before the 17th, and we'll kind of see what happens. But you know, really excited to get out there with my family, and it's a great town, and you know, again, excited for the opportunity.
I was going to ask you. I imagine Buffalo and your brief exposure to it when you came to visit probably looks a whole lot closer to Downers Grove than LA does.
Yeah, there's no question. There's no question.
Yeah, yep. That's but what you know I noticed what? When it's, I got up here as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, the beauty of being, you know, from the Chicago area is it's only an hour flight. You know, we got a ton of family and, people that love to come visit and come see games. So, it's going to be awesome.
Yeah. I think you're going to find, and I'm sure people have told you this already, that home games here are a lot like big time college football games, which I know you obviously experienced up in Madison at Wisconsin. So I think the vibe is going to be a lot like that for you, when you step out on the field on Sundays. Question I have for you, regarding pass pro, you know, you played for, you know, a great talent behind you in Matthew Stafford. I know he's got a little mobility, but he's mostly a pocket guy. I don't need to tell you that Josh Allen is not that. How does that change your mindset, you know, as a pass protector when you know that plays more often than not are going to last a little bit longer with that guy back there throwing the football?
Exactly right. Yeah, I think your mindset, I guess, doesn't change, but it changes in the fact that you got blocked forever. And, you know, when you have a special talent like him that can make, you know, plays not only with his arm, but with his feet as well, you gotta use every ounce of energy you can play to play to give him an opportunity to make something happen. So maybe a little bit different in terms of the, you know, post-snap stuff with Josh's ability to move, but I had a ton of respect for Matthew and who he is as a player, as a quarterback and a person. But I'm really excited to play for Josh. I think it's going to be incredible.
So you had a chance already to win a world championship with LA, and one of your teammates for the last half of that year was Von Miller, who you're kind of parachuting in. I don't know how well acquainted you are with Von or whatever. He was only there for maybe a cup of coffee, although it was a nice hot cup of coffee when he was there. Give us an idea of what it was like to have him on. He kind of parachuted in halfway through that season, win a world championship, and then all of a sudden he's here.
Yeah, I think when we found out we were signing Von, it was just this energy and like, you know, almost like a, you know, injection of energy that you're like, holy crap, we got some dudes on our front now. But Von Miller to athletes that have been, those guys, seeing them side by side on film was almost surreal. You know, when you're watching practice and you're just like, oh my gosh, these guys are just freaks, efficient movers, powerful technicians. I mean, it was just incredible. So, and then, yeah, when you watched him in the playoffs too, you're just like, my God, this guy is incredible. The ability to put pressure on guys and beat O linemen and, you know, stop the run. I mean, he can do it all. So he's a special guy, special player, and I'm excited to get to play with him again.
We're talking with Bill's newest offensive lineman, David Edwards, who just signed his 1-year contract with the club today. And that brings me to the next question. Good segue, David, because going ones versus ones in training camp every year there, I mean, you're looking at Aaron Donald, Sebastian Joseph Day, Greg Gaines. I mean, you're looking at, I mean, even way back, going back to Michael Brockers before he left, I mean, you're looking at some hosses down inside every day. How much did that make you a better player, and how much easier did it make the games going against talent level like that in practice?
Yeah, I mean, there's no question. I got better as a player as a result of going against Aaron and Sebastian and Greg and you know, Brock. I mean, you know, those guys are elite defensive linemen. So, you know, again, it's when you go one-on-one and in training camp or even in season, like, it brings the best out of everybody. Competition is king, I think, and being able to go against the best only makes you a better player. So did it make it easier in the games? I don't know if I'd say that. Those guys are, you know, going against Aaron is like going against an alien. It's almost, you know, a unique challenge in and of itself. But there's no question I got better going against those guys.
Last one I got for you, David. I know you're a guard by trade as far as your NFL career is concerned, but you played a ton of right tackle at Wisconsin. Has Cromes basically said, hey, let's just let you get settled in at guard? But these guys love position flex here in Buffalo. They like signing guys with some position flex. You have tackle in your background. I'm just curious if that was even brought up by Cromes at all, you know, in the early conversations that you've had. I mean, guard's your spot, it would seem, but it's nice to know you got tackle in your background.
Yeah, that wasn't brought up in our discussions. I think that, you know, guard is primarily what we were talking about. But I told him and I told, you know, the other people in the building, like, I'm willing to play whatever position best fits myself, best fits this team, best fits the offense. And ultimately, you know, the goal is to win a championship. And so however I can contribute to that is what I'm willing to do, whether that's tackle or guard. But I would imagine initially it would be guard.
Yeah. David, thanks. Congratulations on the new contract. Welcome to Buffalo. It's great talking to you, and good luck down there, and we'll see you when you get here.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate your time, and thanks for having me.
And happy belated birthday. Heck of a belated birthday present. You got a new contract? That's good birthday present. So happy birthday as well.
No doubt. Yeah. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
That's David Edwards joining us, your newest Buffalo Bills offensive lineman. Just celebrated a birthday on Monday, the day before Coach McDermott's birthday, which was Tuesday. So turns 26 on Monday, signs a contract on Thursday. That's a pretty good week for one David Edwards. And I the only reason I brought up tackle is because, Steve, like, he played 3 years at right tackle at the University of Wisconsin, and it's not like, well, you know, he just played tackle, but he projects to guard in the NFL. Guy was a first-team All-American at tackle. So that just got my wheels turning, because you know how Brandon Bean and the coaching staff loves position flex. So, you know, if you're in a pinch, it's not like it's a foreign position to this guy.
He was also a four-star or a three-star recruit as a high school option quarterback, too. So
right. So you're right about that.
He's not the I'm thinking he's probably not going to be the emergency quarterback either, but no doubt. He's big enough to play tackle.
Long enough,
and it's not a verse. He's a lot closer to playing tackle than he is, you know, the emergency quarterback, that's for sure.
And I think – and you can tell me, because, you know, you played in Super Bowl, so you can validate this or invalidate it. But anytime you can get a guy on your roster that's been in the big game and won the thing, there's value there, isn't it?
I think so, particularly when, you know, the closer you get to being in that game. And if you do actually get to that game, having a guy that was there just within the last handful of years is huge. Just because he's like, hey, guys, just – think about this and this and this, because this is going to happen, that's going to happen. Don't let it zap your head. It's stuff like that. It's just reassuring to have guys in the locker room are saying, hey, relax, this is not a big deal kind of thing, when all this new and different thing stuff happens around that game.
I mean, it's a pretty good resume for him. Four NFL
really
seasons, 45 starts, 4 playoff appearances. So, I mean, the guy's been in big games in the postseason. So this is a team that goes to the postseason every year. That's not going to be a foreign thing for him. He'll settle right in with the rest of this group. And I think what we've got here is what's shaping up to be a pretty interesting competition at right guard, because I think he is direct competition for Ryan Bates for that right guard spot.
Yeah, no doubt. Absolutely. And McGovern, whether they play right or left, they just got really a lot better down inside with the two last two signings of these offensive linemen, McGovern and now Edwards.
Yeah. We got to take a break here, but that was a good conversation with the Bills' newest offensive lineman, David Edwards. We're getting a little wacky today in terms of your topic of discussion. What would be the wildest scenario in the AFC East and why? We've got choices for you on the Twitter poll at One Bills Live. A, the Bills acquire DeAndre Hopkins. B, the Jets get Odell Beckham and Aaron Rodgers. C, the Patriots swing big for Lamar Jackson, or something else. What do you think's the wildest scenario for this division? And we've got some updates on some of the reports that are flying around as well about one DeAndre Hopkins. We'll get to that and plenty more, including your phone calls here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, welcome back to One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. Taking your phone calls at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550, the number to get on board. Asking you, getting a little crazy today, what would be the wildest scenario in the AFC East this offseason and why? Choices are on the poll at One Bills Live. A, Bills acquire DeAndre Hopkins. B, Jets get Odell Beckham Jr. and Aaron Rodgers. C, the Patriots swing big for Lamar Jackson. Or something else you've cooked up in your own head. You let us know at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550, the number to get on board. There is news flying around on DeAndre Hopkins today. Various NFL newsbreakers, shall we say, talking about DeAndre Hopkins. There was a report earlier today that up to five teams could be interested in acquiring DeAndre Hopkins via trade from a Cardinals team that is admittedly rebuilding and is looking to shed fat veteran salaries, and Hopkins would certainly qualify for that. And then there is this from Aaron Wilson, who covers the Houston Texans, and he is saying that DeAndre Hopkins' trade market is headlined by the Bills per his NFL sources. Five-time Pro Bowl selection has plenty of interest on the trade market, but financial expectations might impact any further interest from teams like the Chiefs and the Ravens, who are not among the bidding teams, per sources. Now, here's the rub, Steve. Let's just say that these reports are accurate, and there are a handful of teams in contact with the Cardinals about what it would take to pull DeAndre Hopkins off the Cardinals roster and put them onto theirs. We saw Brandon Cooks go to Dallas for a fifth and a sixth round pick. I would tend to think that DeAndre Hopkins, who in my estimation is significantly a better receiver than Brandon Cooks, would cost more.
But
if you have five,
number.
He does have a bigger salary number, but with five teams interested, that cost could get significant very quickly.
Right. The problem is the thing that brings it back into the Brandon Cooks conversation is the fact that D-Hop has a $19 million salary coming to him. That's a problem. Now, it's been reported that Arizona will take some of that money and hang on to it. Like, they'll pay like $7 million of his salary. That'll bring him down to like $12 million on your team or whatever the number is. Maybe they'll pay $15 million of it, or maybe they'll pay nothing. I don't know, whatever it is. If they are willing to carry some of the salary on their books and get rid of the other, that makes it more affordable for all five of those teams. So, and believe me, all five of those teams would love to have Arizona carry as much as they would. But that does mean what you give up is more. So if you're Buffalo, you give up a player and draft picks and don't have to take all of that salary. If you get DeAndre Hopkins for less than $10 million, yeah.
I don't know if you're going to get there, but.
Right. I mean, that's a big jump.
I mean, that's half of the money he's due.
Because
he's due 19.45 this year.
Yeah, and you've heard all the stuff. I mean, say we trade Ed Oliver to Arizona for DeAndre Hopkins. Well, they're taking Ed's 10.9. So they're not I mean, right. there's the money they're taking. You know, you're going to ask us to take your 10.9 and then pay another 7 for DeAndre? No thanks. Well, you know, they're not going to do that.
Right.
So they're not getting any cap relief because of that deal.
I think the other fly in the ointment here, and Brandon Bean mentioned this last week, he said that we're not necessarily done in free agency, but if we have to do anything significant, it would involve either more restructures, which he sounded hesitant to do because he doesn't like building up what he called an avalanche in a couple of years that
right.
it just swallows up your team and you have to start from scratch and, you know, tear it all down. He doesn't want to do that. So he seemed reluctant to do any more restructures. So then the next option is moving people off the roster to create cap space. And they only have 63, 64 players on the roster right now anyway. And you're tight on the cap. You need money for your rookie pool. You also need about $3.5 million for your practice squad alone when you get to the regular season. And when you get to the regular season, they all count, not just the top 51. So it's a juggling act. And when you're talking about acquiring a player with this kind of a cap number, whether it's whether some of his money is taken care of by the Cardinals or not, you have to have the dominoes lined up as far as who you're moving off the roster to make his money fit. So you've got to plan all of that in addition to finding out what the Cardinals' accommodations are going to be for you to take on his salary and add it to your roster. Now, the other option here, too, is, and I think this is likely to happen no matter who gets him, obviously depending on each team's cap situation, but knowing a good number of the teams, at least at this stage of the game, have a lot less cap room than they did 2 weeks ago,
right?
I would tend to think that once you get the once the Cardinals whittle down the pool of trade partners to about one or two teams, at that point in time, they will probably let Hopkins representatives talk to that potential trade partner and say, hey, if you want to do an extension and spread his money out a little, let's start working on that now. But I think that's got to get pretty far along in the negotiating process in terms of what's exchanged in a trade before they let his agent talk to the potential buyer, shall we say, to talk contract extension.
Hopkins is due $19.4 this year.
Yeah, in base salary. Yeah.
Base. Next year, it's $14.9. So if you're – and none of that's probably guaranteed. He's probably got bonuses and stuff built in, so there's going to be a cap hit no matter what because of bonuses he's already received. That goes to Arizona this year. But – the money that you're going to pay, you could say, okay, D-Hop, how about this? You got 19 this year, 14 next year. How about if we take that, what how many was that, $33 million? Let's take that $33
million,
$34 million, spread it out over into 3 years, but we'll guarantee 25 of it.
Well, I think, I don't know if they want to do that, go that far, but the premise is correct, Steve. Your premise is correct.
Yeah.
Keep the total amount of money the same. Add a year onto his contract for his age 33 season, and then for him doing that, you take some of that $33 million and you put it in his pocket today when he signs the contract. Yeah, you're still going to get your $33 million. We'll put 10 in your pocket right now.
Or we'll spread it. We'll give it to you in 2 years, but we'll guarantee it. We'll guarantee more of it further down the line, that kind of thing. So you can get that under the cap that way. So that's possible. That way you don't get hammered by – the cap, and DeAndre will say, well, shoot, if you're going to guarantee it, yeah. Because then if, you know, catastrophe hits, he still gets the money. And
yeah.
So there are ways to do it, but he has to say, okay, right?
Yeah, I would like to think that he sees the writing on the wall here. He knows that Arizona is going to be doing a full teardown and a rebuild under a new GM and a new head coach, and he's entering his age 31 season. He knows that there is far less time in front of him to his NFL career than is behind him at this point. And I would like to think that if winning is important to him, he's willing to make some concessions. You know, redo your deal, but don't give him, you know, I'm not going to take any new money. You need to spread out my money right now. That's fine, but let's guarantee some up front so I know I'm getting money in my pocket this year. You know, and if you want to put in other incentives, great. I would hope he just wants to win at this point in time. So,
well, plus, I don't know. From outside looking in, it looks Buffalo would be a much more attractive place to play at this point of his career than Arizona for sure.
Yeah.
And depending on who the other suitors are, which I don't, you know, it's been conjectured, but I don't know. You're coming to a place where they're going to sling it. You want to be part of that, and they're going to be there at the end. They're going to be in the tournament. This club. And you want to be a part of it. Playing with Josh, playing with Steph, in this environment, there's a lot to be said for that.
Right.
of him, you know, sitting down and really listening to what the Bills have to say, and how much how enticing they can make it to say, yeah, I'll take that deal. Certainly, he's not going to take a Certainly, he's not going to take a step backward and leave money on the table. But certainly, if there are ways you can structure a contract that make it palatable easily for the Buffalo Bills, if he's willing to take it.
Yeah. So there are a lot of hurdles to clear here. First, any other team that might be competing to acquire DeAndre Hopkins. And look, we're only going on reports here. And look, the Bills or any other team is not going to confirm their interest one way or the other to anybody. Usually things stay pretty quiet on fronts like this. And the part of the reason why is you don't want to pull any other teams into the mix, you know, just by stating your interest.
Right.
So it's a multi-layered type situation here. The more people are reporting on it, though, the more you think there is some legitimacy to multiple teams being interested. And it makes sense. I mean, he's a dynamic player, even at age 31.
Once Arizona made it clear they were willing to move him, once it got to the point where the Brandon Cooks deal you're talking about came out, and they said, and a lot of teams said, well, that's what Brandon Cooks going for. What are you asking for D-Hop? And then the conversation started, and nobody was biting on a number one for that salary cap and those, you know. So then, now, 3 days ago, I would have said, this is not going to happen. Now, maybe.
Right.
I mean, we're in this spot where if we say it enough, it's going to happen. And I don't think that's not true.
I'd love, but that's the case, that I'll way. Keep talking about it. I'd love to speak it into existence.
It feels that way, that we could speak it into existence. I don't think that's true.
Yeah.
But man, oh man, it sure feels good to discuss it in ways that seem relatively possible.
Right. So the latest report is saying that the Ravens and the Chiefs would not be interested because of the financial implications involved, and that makes sense because both of those teams only have about $7 million under the cap right now, and you've got a draft class, among other things, to, you know, worry about. The Bills, at least according to OverTheCap.com, have about $9.8 million. Now, that's probably changed with the signing of David Edwards today. And then you've got the Patriots with about a little over $12 million available to them, and the Raiders are even below the Bills at about 8.7 in cap space. So every one of these teams would have to do some financial juggling to try to make something like this work. And I don't know, stranger things have happened. I'm not saying it can happen, but it's going to take a lot of work and a lot of creativity. We have to take a break here, but we start taking your phone calls when we come back. James in Akron will lead us off, along with others holding at 803-0550. What is your wildest AFC East player acquisition scenario? You let us know. The poll is up at One Bills Live. We're back in a second. All right, more Bills news to report here as we close in and close out our number one. But before we do that, we do have to remind you that the Bills store is going to be closing on March 24th. That's tomorrow, for some big changes. Upon reopening on April 1st, there will be a new operator, better assortment of your favorite team apparel and products, and improved services. Hall of Famer Thurman Thomas will be part of the reopening festivities from 11 to 1 p.m. on April 1st. The first 500 customers will receive a limited edition Buffalo Bills coin with a purchase, although you can still shop online currently at shopbuffalobills.com in the meantime. So just a heads up, if you're driving by Abbott Road and you wanted to pop in, you won't be able to do so from March 24th to March 31st. The Bills news to report, we already told you earlier this hour that the reports are out there that Jamison Crowder will be signing a one-year contract with the New York Giants. So too, according to Giants beat reporter Jordan Renan, will be also signing tight end Tommy Sweeney. So the former seventh-round pick of the Bills in 2019 is a free agent, and he's going to be signing a contract with the Giants. No surprise there. If Sweeney wasn't going to be here, that would be the first place I'd expect him to go, and sure enough, that's what's happened.
Easy transition, same offense.
Right. So, and he's a Jersey guy, too, so he gets to go home.
Okay. There's that.
So extra bonus for one Tommy Sweeney. He was a great dude, great locker room guy, great teammate. And
18 catches over the course of his career, 165 yards.
Inactive a lot this past year.
Yeah, he did not see the field a lot for Buffalo.
Quentin Morris kind of passed him on the depth chart this year. So there really wasn't a lot of opportunity for him here. Maybe he gets more of an opportunity to dress on game days down there with the Giants, who are still trying to build their roster up, entering year two with Joe Shane and Brian Daboll. So we wish him luck down there. Let's go to the phones at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. Leading us off is James in Akron. What do you got for us, James? You're on One Bills Live.
Yeah, I just want to make a comment on the DeAndre Hopkins signing. If he wants to come here and win, I think it's a great idea. We should just get a number one receiver in the draft. I know he's a proven guy, but I still would rather take a chance with a younger guy where we get maybe a couple of years out of DeAndre.
Yeah, he's entering his age 31 season. I think that's fair to assume.
Mm-hmm. So that's my opinion, and I'll let you guys finish up.
Well, I'll say this. It is a balance, James, and I'll say this. Nobody in this draft is as good as DeAndre Hopkins is. Now, they may last longer than D-Hop at this point, but even if you get if you get 3 years out of D-Hop, you're loving life. I would wager that there's not going to be too many guys in this draft that will have the kind of career that D-Hop has had. And going forward, none of these draft players in this draft are going to be able to touch D-Hop, in my opinion. This is not a strong wide receiver draft. There's a couple of guys that are physical specimens that are big and stuff, but they've got some warts on them even coming in. You may get some guys that can play certain positions like slot or whatever. They're going to have nice careers and do some stuff. But if you can get 2 years out of this guy at the level that he can play at, you make that deal all day long, absolutely all day long. And I get what you're saying about having a younger guy and coming in. I think there is just the questions that are already answered by signing a veteran player of the quality of DeAndre Hopkins far outweigh the question marks you're coming in, no matter how gifted and young and fresh some draft pick looks. I think D-Hop's a better option. So I disagree with you, I guess, James. And I get what you're saying. It's a balance. But I don't think this
He said he was all for it, provided he – you know, would come in for the right money.
Yes, absolutely. But I'm telling you, there's nobody in this draft that's going to help you as much as DeAndre Hopkins this year, for sure.
All right,
maybe even next.
All right, so let me take that conversation a step further and ask you, if you know there is no receiver in this draft that is going to help you as much as DeAndre Hopkins is this year, are you going to part with the second round pick to make the DeAndre Hopkins deal happen? You said there's no receiver in this draft.
Yeah.
You giving up a two?
Not for $19 million a year.
Okay, so you'd give up a two if you can massage the money in terms of what Arizona takes
on. If you can get him for a contract that's worth 6 to 10 a year over the course of the contract and guarantee whatever you want of it, yeah. I'd
you
give
want
up
them,
a two.
You want them to cut it? By two-thirds?
Yeah. Oh, it's got to be. You can't give the guy $20 million. You can't give him
15.
No,
I'm not saying you can give him 20.
You can't even give him 15.
Six is a little steep, though.
Too much?
I think Arizona's taking on a lot.
Well, unless you can rework the contract. I don't care giving him all the money he's got coming. Give him a chance at it.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm coming from. I think that would be very palatable to the Cardinals if you can convince DeAndre Hopkins reps to take the $34 million he's owed over the next 2 years and spread it out for three and make $10 million of it a bonus that goes in his pocket today. So he gets $34 million, but it's only $24 in base salary over the next 3 years. Now you can spread it out however you want. You can make it two this year and then make it 11 next year and 11 the last year, and then leave 10 in a bonus that you spread over those 3 years as well. Now you can probably fit it under the Bills cap this year and then figure out the rest later.
Right.
I don't know if he would do it, but it's an example of the creativity that's going to have to take place for it to happen.
Yeah, his numbers got to be right.
And so what that
if
means...
If you get him for 2 years at the quality of play that he can give you, a second rounder, kick that thing in the curb. You
right.
Go, do it.
I just wonder where it goes, knowing there are other... Reportedly, there are other bidders in this process that are no doubt talking to the Cardinals as well. But that just shows you how multi-layered this is. One, what is Arizona willing to do in terms of the money he's still owed? Are they going to help you out with that or not? Two, what's the compensation necessary to land him with other bidders in the process? Three, what is Hopkins willing to do with his own contract to rework it without any new money, perhaps, and tacking on a year? Yeah, how much would he have to put in his pocket in a bonus today to get him to do that? That's just three things right there, and the list is probably even longer than that.
But they're not
in terms of making something happen.
And that's not, well, yeah.
And that's probably why it's taking as long as it is.
It's not insurmountable. I mean, that happens in league trade circles all the time. Every deal is kind of like this, particularly if the guy's got to rework his deal. That's really the one thing that is important in this thing. But let's face it, DeAndre Hopkins has real incentive to rework that deal because otherwise he's stuck. And they're going to have, you know, if he wants a chance to play and all that, he knows he can see the writing on the wall. His cap number is too much for Arizona. They want no part of it. So if he wants to play and be a part of a team, you know, he's got to be willing to see that writing on the wall and make changes to his contract. If he's not willing to do that and he's just going to force Arizona's hand, I think we would already know that.
Yeah. Break time for us here. When we come back, we are going to talk a little AFC East with a guy who usually has his ear to the ground on the New York Jets, Dan Leberfeld from Jets Confidential, joining us here on One Bills Live in hour number two. Stay tuned.
Live, presented by Kaleida Health.
All right, here we are, hour number two on a Thursday. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. And pleased to be joined now by the writer and publisher of Jets Confidential magazine to talk a little Jets with us. And it's one Dan Leberfeld joining us on the line. Dan, long time no talk. How you been?
Good, Chris and Steve. How you guys doing?
We're doing all right. We're doing all right. We'll get to some of your upcoming coverage shortly, but the stuff coming down today about OBJ, I mean, it's a player that New York football fans are wholly familiar with. What kind of credence are we giving to that potential acquisition?
Well, you know, the Jets under Joe Douglas are one of those teams that, to use the cliche, turns over every stone. So they look into a lot of things, and a lot of times because they do that, their name gets attached to a lot of different players. I just don't know if it's the best idea. They have a very good number one receiver in Garrett Wilson. They spent big money on Alan Lazard to give them the big target they need at receiver. They still have Denzel Mims. I think they are interested in OBJ, but I do think they cast a wide net when it comes to players they're interested in.
But they also, last year we commented at length and were proven correctly about how well they managed their off season and bringing in just the right players. The draft went extremely well. They got the offensive rookie of the year, the defensive rookie of the year, and Breece Hall could have won the offensive player rookie of the year himself before he was injured. So they have really stepped it up in the last two off seasons. What do you think is the biggest obstacle to the OBJ deal?
Well, I think that when you look at what they're trying to build and you talk about those terrific young players, do you want to now bring in a guy who obviously needs the ball? He's a tremendous talent. Garrett Wilson is clearly the number one, and that led to some issues last year with Elijah Moore, who was traded yesterday. He was not getting the football because of some quarterback issues, but also Garrett Wilson being the main guy in the passing game. So do you want to go down that rabbit hole again? Because you have to assume that Garrett Wilson and Alan Lazard are going to be a really big part of this passing attack. So how many footballs will they have for OBJ? Once again, he's a very talented player, but what's the old saying? And I tweeted about this yesterday. I think Bill Belichick said it. We're not trying to collect talent. We're trying to build the team. At what point do you say, you know what? Enough fantasy football. Let's try to build a team. Let's try to build a culture a certain way.
All right, so let's look at it this way, Dan, because, I mean, the Jets had a good amount of cap space at the outset. It's obviously less so now, especially after the Lazard deal. SpotTrack.com has him at about 11.5 under. I don't know if that's updated since the Elijah Moore trade, which had money going out. So what? How much do they have to kind of be careful with what they're doing here, knowing the kind of salary they would be taking on in a Rodgers trade? Because, I mean, I would tend to think you're already pretty tight as it is. You had a Rodgers contract, and I understand the base is only coming to you, but still in all, that's a big number.
That's right. That has to be factored in, and I think most people think that's going to eventually happen. Don't know when, but I would say it's eventually going to happen, and that his salary this year is $59 million. Now, that's not going to be the cap hit the Jets have because the Packers are going to have to take on some of that expense. I'm not a cap expert, but I could tell you that there will be some maneuvering there, and it will not be, obviously, a $59 billion cap hit for the Jets with Aaron Rodgers. So, yeah, Chris, that is a factor in trying to figure out whether you add a player like OBJ. And they still have some other needs here. Now, granted, they can address some of them in the draft, but I think, you know, people talk so much about the Jets' defense and how much it improved last year, and it did improve. But it's very far from being the unit they still need to be. They had similar problems to the Bills in terms of stopping the run late last year because, similar to a Bills philosophy, they go with smaller, quicker defensive linemen who could shoot upfield and create havoc. But a big problem for the Jets, especially during that six-game losing streak at the end of the year that knocked them out of playoff contention, was they were getting gashed against the run. I don't think they played well in any of those games against the run in the six-game losing streak. So they really need to get a big-time run stuffer at defensive tackle. I don't know if it's going to happen in free agency now because a lot of those guys aren't available, like Dalvin Tomlinson and some of the good run stuffers that were available in free agency, but they've got to fill that need. They also need to get a coverage linebacker. Tight end, you start with Dawson Knox against the Jets. Tight ends killed the Jets last year. So, yes, they had a much improved defense last year, but this philosophy, this narrative out there that, you know, they plug in Aaron Rodgers, they have a great defense, they have a lot of weapons, they're one player away, I'm not sure that's entirely true. They were much improved last year on defense, but they still got a long way to go.
Has Aaron Rodgers, and the reason, you know, the reasons are obvious why the deal hasn't happened yet, but has that New York Jet Green Bay trade for Aaron Rodgers hamstrung the Jets' ability to go out and get these guys because of the cap implications of Rodgers?
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. They've made a few moves here and there, but they haven't been that active in free agency because of the Aaron Rodgers uncertainty and waiting to see that happen. You can't go crazy in free agency when you have that kind of contract and that kind of player coming in eventually. So, yeah, that has kind of frozen the Jets a little bit in some of the moves they need to make. Clearly, when they made that trading Elijah Moore to Cleveland yesterday and getting back a second-round pick, sending a third-round pick, but that second-round pick is very important because it could come into play as compensation for Aaron Rodgers. You'd have to think getting that two was huge in terms of a piece of what the puzzle might look like in terms of the compensation for Rodgers.
Wouldn't you also think that the Jets are going to be looking to send dollars out in that trade too, knowing how tight they are against the cap? I mean, I know that I already kind of asked you about that in terms of the cap space still left for, you know, the Jets, but I mean, Aaron Rodgers' base salary next year is $15.85, and they only got $11.5 in room. I would tend to think a player or two are going to have to go the other way in that deal, right?
Yeah, a name that would be one that makes a ton of sense is Denzel Mims. You know, not only did Elijah Moore ask for a trade last year, Denzel Mims did as well, because the Jets were so deep at receiver, and those guys weren't getting the rock very often. Denzel Mims had more to complain about because he was actually fifth or sixth on the depth chart. Elijah Moore was playing a lot. He just wasn't seeing the ball. But Denzel Mims asked for a trade last summer, and so it's possible a player like Denzel Mims could be included in the trade for Aaron Rodgers. He'd be a good guy for the Packers to replace Alan Lazard with. Another guy who could factor into the cap situation that you bring up related to Rodgers is Corey Davis, the wide receiver, came over a few years ago from Tennessee, signed a big money deal. He's got a pretty big cap number this year, so he's been rumored to be a possible cap casualty. So Corey Davis's contract could be moved, as could Denzel Mims.
So what are the highlights so far? Certainly the Lazard acquisition sets the Jets up with a big, big-bodied wideout to complement Garrett Wilson, a red zone threat, and everything that Lazard brings to the table. Is that the highlight so far for them? You know, obviously besides the Rodgers revelation, which hasn't happened yet, is Lazard their highlight?
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. You know, people assume, and rightfully so, that the signing of Lazard was connected to Rodgers, because we all know about that wish list story, which has been poo-pooed a little bit, that Rodgers put together a wish list for the Jets and the players he'd like them to sign to entice him to come to the team. Rodgers downplayed that big time on the Pat McAfee show. I don't think it was demands. I think it was just a conversation saying, yeah, these are a few of the players I like. You know, if you're interested in them in free agency, I wouldn't mind you signing them. Lazard is a guy that they needed whether they got Rodgers or not, even though that is something that made Rodgers happy, the fact that they signed Lazard. But they did not have the last couple of years that 6'5", 220, 230-pound receiver who could win 50-50 balls consistently, you know, go up and climb the ladder and beat the defensive back for the ball. Denzel Mims, you would think, would be that player. He is 6'3". He has good leaping ability. But as you know, Steve, as a guy who played receiver on a high level for a long time, there's a difference between the ability to climb the ladder and go up and get a high pass and winning 50-50 balls. Denzel Mims good at going up and jumping, getting footballs, but when it's contested, he's not that great. Alan Lazard is that kind of guy. You know, it might be better than 50-50 with Alan Lazard, with his size and strength and his grip strength. It might be more 70-30 on jump balls for Alan Lazard. So in the red zone, you know, on fade routes, Alan Lazard is the kind of player they needed, whether they got Aaron Rodgers or not. Really didn't have a guy like that.
We're talking with Jets publisher of Jets Confidential magazine, Dan Leberfeld, also does a lot of writing in there. And if you're interested in a subscription, you can go to jetsconfidential.com to find out what Buffalo's AFC East rival is doing. And, you know, we're talking about the receiver position here, Dan, and, you know, Mecole Hardman is the latest addition. And, you know, it's just a one-year deal. They probably get him on the cheap, coming off an injury-riddled season for him. And they move Elijah Moore out. Is this an indication that Hardman will be the slot guy, or do they have somebody else in mind for that, and Hardman's just the guy on the outside to take the top off the defense?
No, they definitely need a slot guy, because let's not forget that Braxton Berrios, we talked before about cap casualties. Braxton Berrios was a cap casualty earlier in the offseason. Terrific kick and punt returner and slot receiver. He's out of the mix. Now, Elijah Moore was very good in the slot. He's out of the mix. Jeff Smith did some work in the slot. He signed with the New York Football Giants. So they don't have a lot of players in the slot. So McCole Hardman will help them in the slot. He'll also help them with kick and punt returns, something that Berrios did a good job with. I just thought that was a tremendous move by Jets GM Joe Douglas yesterday, because think about it. You get a second-round pick for Elijah Moore. I know you have to send a three, but to me, the key to every draft are the first and second-round picks. Yeah, you want to hit on later ones, but if you want to have a great team, you got to nail those first and second-round picks. So now the Jets have a one and two twos. We talked before about maybe one or a couple of those picks going to the Packers for Aaron Rodgers. We'll see how that goes. I don't think the Jets ever want to give up a one for Rodgers, but it's possible one of those twos goes to Green Bay for Rodgers. But think about what Joe Douglas did. He replaces Elijah Moore with a similar player. And actually, I think Hardman is faster than Elijah Moore. Hardman has world-class speed. Moore is fast, but not Hardman fast. So they get a good slot receiver, a good returner, a guy who could take the top off the defense. They replace Moore, and they get an all-important second-round pick in that trade that they can use in the Aaron Rodgers potential deal. So I thought that was a really good job of roster maneuvering by Joe Douglas yesterday.
What does your gut tell you about what's going to happen? They got six picks, or actually seven picks now, with the two twos. What's your gut tell you about what's going to happen with these Jet draft picks?
You mean in terms of trades or what they might do with them?
Yeah, first of all, let's start. If they keep all of them, which probably unlikely, but if they keep all of them, who are they going to take? What are their needs?
Well, I'll tell you what. When it comes to the 13th pick of the first round, I think they need to think about the trenches, get an offensive lineman or defensive tackle, a nose tackle. As we talked about before, they need one of those 6'3", 320-pound athletic nose tackles who takes up double teams and is very good at stacking and shedding linemen and stopping the run. We talked about it before, how they were gashed up the middle too much. So defensive tackle, offensive line. I think a guy like Paris Johnson out of Ohio State, the offensive tackle who could also play guard. He played guard as a sophomore for the Buckeyes. I think he'd be perfect at 13, because while they do have a lot of offensive tackles in the building, with Mekhi Becton, with Max Mitchell, with Dwayne Brown, they're all coming off injuries. In the case of Mitchell, a blood clot issue, so more of an illness. But three tackles who are in the plans who you have to wonder about their health. I'm sure they'll be fine, but you never know. So Paris Johnson would be perfect at 13, because not only could he give you insurance at offensive tackle with all those medical question marks, but he could plug in inside at guard as well. And I think a nose tackle would make a lot of sense. I don't think the Boston College kid would make any sense for the Jets, because they need a bigger, more stacked guy. He's along the lines of what they've had. He's 6'1", 280. They don't need that anymore. They need a guy who's going to wreck the game up the middle with his size, athleticism, and power.
And then last one I've got for you, Dan, what is the latest on Breece Hall's rehabilitation? And is every indication, at least right now, that he's going to be ready for training camp? I mean, he suffered that injury right around midseason.
Yeah, I think, you know, training camp could be iffy. You know, I always find it interesting when we all say this, we all report this, this guy will be ready for OTAs. This guy will be ready for training camp. We all know darn well a player coming off a knee injury, you could say he's ready for training camp, but he's going to be on a pitch count. You know, you always hear those stories about he'll be ready. He'll be ready, but they're going to be really careful in the summer. I would be shocked if he's not ready for the opener, but I do think, you know, this is a situation where in camp they're going to handle him with kid gloves.
Dan, thanks so much for spending some time with you. Appreciate it. Always love hearing from you.
It's always great to be on with you guys.
All right, take care, Dan. That's Dan Leberfeld, writer and publisher of Jets Confidential, which you can find at jetsconfidential.com. If you want to get the lowdown on Buffalo's AFC East rival, and I imagine he'll have full pre-draft coverage here in the monthly issue coming up at the start of April. Does good work down there for a long time covering the Jets. And I just wonder how they're going to fit it all. I'm surprised. I'll be honest with you, Steve. I'm surprised the Jets have done as much as they have already in free agency, because in my estimation, the Aaron Rodgers thing holds them hostage a little bit.
It is an anchor, yeah.
In terms of what they feel they can and cannot do. And I don't see any way around acquiring Aaron Rodgers without sending players to Green Bay currently on their roster.
Right. I said,
dollars out for dollars in.
Right. I said earlier they had seven. They don't have seven. They have two twos. They have one, two twos, no third, and then a four, five, and six. So they got six picks just like the Bills do, although they're rearranged differently. And they're not going to – I mean, the Aaron Rodgers thing would have to happen – to me, would have to happen before the draft, right? Because if the Packers are going to trade draft picks for Aaron Rodgers, they want them this year. You want to get them this. You don't want to wait till after this season to start getting more help in the draft. Particularly
right.
If you lose your two-time, your four-time MVP. Two out of the last 3 years, he's been the MVP of the league. You got to start filling those holes up now.
Yeah, he's got. So here's the thing. Rodgers in his contract has a $58.3 million option bonus that has to be exercised between St. Patrick's Day and week one. That's the time frame that the Packers have to work with to get him off of their books. And then that option bonus, I got to look into what happens to that. Does that just go away if the Packers trade him? I don't know what the language in the contract says or whether the new team would inherit it. And if they inherit it, well, then the case there is they're going to have to arrange something.
Sure.
They're going to drop a guaranteed $58 million option bonus. So we'll have to see, you know, how that all shakes out. Because there's another option bonus in 2024 that is on his contract as well, which would kick in the 2026 compensation in the contract. So his base salary this year isn't the issue. It's $1.165 million. The issue is the option bonus, which is $58.3 million. And it basically, you know, kicks in somewhere between now and week one, depending on when, you know, the Packers enact it. And if he gets traded, do they have to enact it before they trade him? Probably not. Otherwise, they probably wouldn't even be entertaining trading.
I don't know.
This is the area of contract language that gets a little too complicated, where unless you can see the exact wording of the deal, do you know all the parameters contained within that option bonus? Do the Jets inherit that? Do they have to rework that with Aaron Rodgers? You know, what becomes of the Packers? What cap hits do they incur? If they trade him, it's different from if they cut him. So
if they trade him, the contract goes with him. And if they have not paid that bonus and the window's still open, that leaves it up to the Jets to either – pick up that option or rework his contract with his input.
Yeah, I don't pretend to know for sure how those option bonuses work and whether new teams inherit bonus elements of the contract. But if the money hasn't been paid yet, I would think that the Jets would inherit that. So
right.
That's a thing.
It's a
$58.3 million isn't nothing.
It's a huge thing. Huge thing. Yeah, they got to figure it out. And that's why that's why it's taking so long.
Yeah, it's sticky. There's no question about it. All right, we got to take a break here. When we come back, we are going to discuss more AFC East because it's our poll for the day. We'll see where the numbers sit when we come back. What would be the wildest scenario in the AFC East this offseason and why? A, Bills acquire DeAndre Hopkins. B, the Jets get Odell Beckham and Rodgers. C, the Patriots swing big for Lamar Jackson, or something else you've got cooked up in your head. You can let us know at 803-0550. Steve and I back in a second here on One Bills Live. Wildest AFC East scenarios you can think of. That's what's up on our Twitter poll right now. We're asking you for your thoughts, either on the phone lines at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550, or on the tweet sheet, which is where we're headed right now, way out in front for the wildest offseason scenario in the division is New England swinging for Lamar Jackson over 50% of the vote. Bills acquiring Hopkins is seen as the second wildest, Steve. How about that? Jets getting OBJ and Rodgers, only getting about 12% of the vote.
Yeah, Lamar Jackson going to the Patriots.
That'd be pretty wacky.
Well,
I can't think about it. I can't see him doing it.
Tua, Lamar, Josh, and Aaron Rodgers.
Gee, Willikers.
Youch. That turns the that yeah.
I was the AFC East would be on Monday Night Football every week.
I was going through. There's like eight. There's 36 primetime games. Thursday night, Sunday night, Monday night. So that'd be 3 times 18, whatever that is. It'd be 54.
Yeah.
54 primetime games during the regular season. How many would be AFC East games? Because there might be some where 40? They face each other. Right?
With at least one team, yeah.
They would all, and plus, the Bills would be, are playing the NFC East this year, right?
They are playing the NFC
all
East.
All four of those games would be
big
prime
markets.
Time. All four of those games would be prime time. The Jets would be all prime time.
And they're playing the AFC West, too.
Oh, my gosh. They,
and they play Cincinnati.
An
the
AFC
Bills
East
do.
Team would be on every single weekend prime time, Thursday, Sunday, Monday. One
if
that, of them.
Yeah, if all those quarterbacks
multiple,
were
if
in,
not,
yeah.
If not Thursday, Monday, both.
Yeah.
They, if all of those things happened and Lamar ended up in this division with Aaron and Josh and Tua, goodness gracious.
Let's go to the Tweet Sheet, see what you think. Tweet Sheet brought to you by Corrigan Moving Systems, the official equipment moving company of the Buffalo Bills. Ron leads us off and says, the Bills have typically played very well against Lamar and Rodgers. Just not sure if Rodgers is truly all in with football anymore. He seems more worried about attention these days. Acquiring D-Hop would be big for the Bills and give him that wide receiver combo the division would have to contend with. I kind of agree with all of this. How much do you think the Jets are thinking about Rodgers' commitment to football, especially beyond this year?
Well, beyond this year, I think that's a real question. This year, I don't think there's any question. He wants to come in and win another MVP for the Jets. He wants to come in and hit a home run. I think that's his.
Win an MVP, not a Super Bowl.
Yes, as a matter of fact.
Okay. Fair enough.
He'd be in the conversation if they're that good anyway. But still, that's what he really wants. And so he's going to be highly, highly motivated to come in and do it. Now, depending on how this season goes, will depend on his commitment to next year, in my opinion. If he comes in and the Jets do a bunch of Jetsy things during the regular season, he may just pull the ripcord and say, you know what, I'm going to parachute home because I got everything I need. You know what I'm saying?
I'm good with me.
Yes, exactly. I like me even if nobody else does. I'm out.
He's like that. He's quickly turning into the TO of quarterbacks. I like me some me.
Yeah. So that's what I think. I think it's a real question, no doubt. It's a real question what his you know commitment will be past this year. Yeah. This year, I think it's going to be all in. He's going to go, and then he's going to evaluate.
I'll show the Packers.
He's going to evaluate after the season as close as they are, or closest, you know, depending on what happens. And he's going to hold them. He's going to hold them hostage, just like he did the Packers that next offseason. Yeah. But I think depending on how it goes and how close they seem to be, that will dictate what he does in year two for the Jets.
Brad on the tweet sheet says, it's an arms race in the AFC East right now. It wouldn't surprise me if all three things listed happened this offseason. The good news is the other teams in the AFC East are doing this in an attempt to contend with the Bills. We are in a good spot. Go Bills. Yeah, I get it. But as I said on the show yesterday, the Dolphins' 1-2 combination at receiver is better than what the Bills can do 1-2 right now. And if the Jets get OBJ, he and Garrett Wilson are a 1-2 combination that's probably better
than
what the Bills
have. Lazard's not bad either, and Mecole Hardman. Think about that. That's Alan Lazard, Mecole Hardman, Garrett Wilson.
That's pretty good right there.
Pretty good. That's a good group. Teams are chasing them down, no question. The Bills are certainly in the front running. I don't know, though. The Bills played really well against Aaron Rodgers last year here in this building. I don't know. Our quarterback's still the best one in the division.
Yeah. Let's go to the phones where Dennis in North Carolina is waiting. What do you got for us, Dennis?
Hey, so first of all, I want to say I've been a Bills fan since 1990. is Steve Tasker has always been my favorite player of all time.
There you go.
We need another player that can cover kickoff and punt returns like Steve did back in the day.
Well, I appreciate it. What else is on your mind?
Well, I was wondering about what y'all think about Buffalo drafting Jalen Hyatt from Tennessee and going after some defensive help, because right now all Brandon Bean is doing is getting offense, and we need some defense.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's kind of going by the board with the focus on the offense so much this offseason that there are some holes on the defensive side of the ball. They need help at middle linebacker, obviously, with the departure of Tremaine Edmonds, and they probably need some defensive tackle help, not only because they only have three under contract. Those three under contract all have expiring contracts after this season. So you kind of have to plan for now and the future to have people, you know, in the pipeline at that position. So, yeah, there are some decisions to be made on the defensive side of the ball, no question. Yeah.
And Jalen Hyatt out of Tennessee, 6 foot. He's a little slight. He's only 100. He's less than 180 pounds. So he's tall, slender kid. But I watched him play, I think it was the Clemson game. I watched that game live as it was happening. It was on TV, but I was watching it live. And I remember he caught my eye. A good player. Down the list on wide receivers, and certainly at number 27, I bet more than one of the guys above him on the list are going to be available. Maybe not all of them. So I don't know that the Bills would like Jalen Hyatt better than they like any of the other prospects. But I don't have a problem with that. He's 6 foot, and like I said, he's a little bit slender.
Well, he's got a high-cut sprinter kind of frame.
Yeah.
That's what his body type is. And he ran a limited route tree. Now, he's not alone in that. There's a lot of college receivers that run a limited route tree, but he pretty much just ran slants, deep posts, and goes. And I just wonder how his high-cut frame is going to do getting in and out of breaks if you ask him to do more than those routes. He may have only run those routes for that very reason, because he can't get in and out being so high-cut, because he's long-legged, which certainly gives him breakaway speed, which is attractive.
Yeah.
But from what I've seen on film for him, it's build-up speed. He's not quick off the line, and he's at top speed in three steps. He's a build-up speed guy. Now, when he gets to top speed, he's pretty dang fast. But it's a build-up speed guy, and some people knock him and say, he's kind of a one-trick pony.
Yeah, maybe.
Strictly outside, limited route tree.
And there are guys with fewer question marks about him that may be available. Quentin Johnston, Jackson, Smith and Jigba, Jordan Addison. Some people have Zay Flowers above him. You know, there's a lot of guys on the list of wide receiver. Now, Hyatt is in the middle of it, but I don't, you know, whether he's the guy they like better or not remains to be seen. I wouldn't be surprised if they take a guy at that position, even if it's not Hyatt.
And I don't know. Hyatt strikes me as a top half of the second round type guy, but who knows? If there's a run at the bottom of round one, maybe he sneaks into the bottom of the first round, and maybe the Bills love him. I don't know. But, yeah, there seems to be some limitations to his game. And maybe it's because he hasn't been asked to do some of the other things. Maybe his game is more diversified than that. We just haven't seen it on tape. What Jalen Hyatt's going to tell everybody to do is go watch his tape against Alabama, because he was a huge part of their upset of Alabama this year, Tennessee. I think he had 2 touchdowns in that game, maybe 3. But he had a big day against the Crimson Tide in Tennessee's upset win that vaulted them into the number one spot in the country.
And the thing you like about him is, as a freshman, I mean, he was in 10 games for the Volunteers. As a sophomore, he was in 13 games. And then as a junior, now they're saying he's a little heavier than what he was listed at, you know, 175. Now he's, you know, 10 pounds, 15 pounds heavier than that, which makes a big difference. You know, he took Alabama's secondary to the cleaners for 6 receptions and 200 yards. So that's a pretty good day, and that says a lot about what he could do in a big moment.
Let's go back to the tweet sheet where Tank says, Bills acquiring Hopkins, as I am not sure how Bean would restructure his contract and make it fit under the cap, would be the most wild scenario for me. Also, how would he fit in with Diggs, Davis, Shakir, Hardy, and Sherfield? Dorsey would have to get a lot more creative in the offense than he did last year. I actually think he would have to get less creative. You have so much talent there. You have so much talent there that can get open naturally. You don't have to scheme anything up. Those guys are going to win more often than not. I think it gets easier.
Right. That's the idea. No question. It's
Diggs and Hopkins? Are you kidding me? Everybody else on the depth chart's getting one-on-ones on every single play.
Yeah, I would be really excited about that. It doesn't mean it's going to happen. It doesn't mean it's even that good an idea because I don't know what Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott know.
Right.
So I know this. On the surface, DeAndre Hopkins is still, at his age, one of the top five wide receivers in the NFL. And when he's healthy and he's on, that guy wins. Bills fans saw it in the Hail Murray pass three, four years ago. You know, you go watch his highlights, and it's almost like a never-ending story. I mean, they go on and on and on and on. The guy catches the ball as well or better than every guy in the league. His hands are elite. No matter what happens, how old he ever gets, he'll be able to catch that ball like that when he's 90.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm all about it. I think it's an awesome idea, and I'd love to see it happen, but it's like one of those other things. It's like it seems too good to be true.
Last tweet we'll read before the break from JT, Rodgers to the Jets. I'm not worried. He'll be running for his life in the AFC East. Also, we own Lamar. I'm not worried about either one of those QBs joining the division. We would still have the best QB, so I would say Hopkins to Buffalo would make the offense unstoppable. Break time for us here. We'll get some final thoughts on the tweet sheet, see if we can squeeze in a phone call as well. Next on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health, it's Buffalo Bills Radio. Going to take a call here quickly while we're short on time. We go to Mark in New Jersey. What do you got for us, Mark?
Hello, good afternoon, gentlemen. Aaron Rodgers here in New York. Oh, my God. It'd be like a train wreck you couldn't turn away from. It's everything the Jets are. They're short-sighted, cut off their nose to spite their face. He likens himself as an intellectual. You mean to tell me he went into a cave and was 90% retired and then came out of the darkness and said he was reinvigorated to play for the Jets?
Yeah.
It's I don't know. It's like he likes to – I don't know. He thinks he's the smartest guy in the room. He's been insulated in Green Bay. He's going to come to the Shark Tank, and there's going to be reporters there that are going to know what he's like and try to goad him. It's obvious. It's good for business. Whether the Jets are the train wreck that they are, like Steve said, Jets things. When those things happen on Sunday, and if we watch Robert Saleh closely enough, he wasn't exactly the best game day coach. There's a lot of rah rah and yuck yuck to him that he doesn't quite have the Rex bravado, but it's there. It is definitely there. It just doesn't. You know, he's in shape. And he's, you know, more attractive and he's a little younger. But it's definitely he likes to all gas, no brakes, receipts. So it's going to be an interesting mix.
Yeah. Thanks for the call, Mark. Yeah. We got to jump here because we are short on time. I think that 90% retired comment, Steve and I talked about this just in our office. That is total posturing to threaten the Packers. He's saying he's 90% retired. So the Packers don't even think about not moving him. Oh, crap. We better move him now before he retires and we get nothing. So he says I'm 90% retired going into my cave. That's all posturing. He wanted to play this year. Next year is a different story. But, yeah, nothing would make me happier than to see it be a mess.
That's right. And it may be. But you're right. Post-game after a bad game is going to be must-watch television, no question.
Yeah. Last thing, Jack on the tweet sheet, voted for Bills getting Hopkins. As much as I'd love to see it, I'm skeptical, though, because the cap and money. I believe Rodgers and the Jets is a foregone conclusion, and I hope OBJ doesn't join him. And I don't even want to speak choice three into the karmasphere. Nope, nope, no thank you. That was a fun thing. We got a little wild today, but it worked. Everybody had fun. I hope you did too, Steve.
I did. I enjoyed that very much.
We'll see you tomorrow at 1:00. Take care, everybody.